Porque com essa dia, qualquer momento fica mais gostoso. Do café da manhã até a hora da novela. Então, bora pra mais um episódio.
Olá, boa noite, muito bem-vindos. Ideais gostam de se apresentar em trincas. Foi assim com a Revolução Francesa, é também assim com as ideias da New Age. Há 245 anos, o lema era liberdade, igualdade e fraternidade. Na nova era, a trindade é mente, corpo e espírito. Agora, o movimento da Deep Ecology, a ecologia profunda, se apoia em três S's. Em inglês, soil, soul and society, terra, alma e sociedade. Ativista da ecologia profunda, o indiano Satish Kumar fundou uma escola na Inglaterra que propõe um aprendizado todo fundado no contato com a natureza. Essa escola já inspirou versões ao redor do mundo, inclusive aqui no Brasil. Ele e a parceira dele de ensino, a física Vandana Shiva, rejeitam a visão do homem como centro do universo. Para eles, o centro é a Terra. Ela chega a pregar uma agricultura que prescinda de toda a tecnologia industrial. Eles também não acreditam ser razoável pensar no homem, indivíduo, sem o coletivo, sem a sociedade. A BBC classificou Vandana como uma das 100 pessoas mais influentes do mundo. O rei Charles tem um busto dela no jardim. Satish e Vandana compartilham uma visão holística do mundo, de interdependência dos humanos com tudo o que nos rodeia. A história de Satish pode ser vista agora bem contada no documentário Teaching Nature, Ensinando Natureza. E a trajetória de Vandana em The Seeds of Vandana Shiva, As Sementes de Vandana Shiva, que são lançamentos agora, de setembro e outubro, na plataforma de streaming Aquarius. Nossa conversa agora é com eles dois, Satish Kumar e Vandana Shiva. Hello, Ms. Shiva. Hello, Mr. Hello. Kumar.
Hello.
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 Thank you so much for this opportunity. We're very glad and honored.
My pleasure. Hello, Vandana.
Hello, Satish.
Yes, good to see you. And you are Pedro?
I'm Pedro. May I call you Satish as well and Vandana by the first name, as Brazilians
do? Sure.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Are you in India, Vandana?
Yes.
Whereabouts?
My home, Dehradun.
It's a very beautiful place near the Himalayas, in the foothills of Himalayas, Dehradun.
You were both born in India, and you know, Brazilian culture is quite different from the Indian way of life. Vandana, Hindu culture is still based on a caste system. Which one were you born in, and how did you deal with this origin?
Well, yeah, I'm very, very blessed that my parents were part of the freedom movement and fighting casteism and fighting sexism was part of our movement agenda, not just freedom from the imperialists, but freedom from all the oppressions within. So my parents gave up caste and adopted the name Shiva, which is beyond caste.
So you were freed from a very young age.
Yes. We didn't know while we were growing up. There was something called caste in India. It's only when we were absolute adults. And, you know, it's not the case that even today we have horrible atrocities against the Dalits. So it's not that caste has disappeared just because my parents were enlightened, you know. It's very much still part of society. And, of course, Satish will tell you about him being a Jain monk, which too transcended caste.
So, Satish, how would you describe the culture you were raised in? What does it mean to be born in India?
It was a privilege to be born in India because Indian culture does not see the division between matter and spirit, between humans and nature. The Indian culture is a kind of what we call Advaita, a non-dualistic culture. So this unity between matter and spirit and between humans and nature was very much part of my upbringing. As Vandana said, I was a Jain monk, and the Jain religion sees whole earth as a living organism. Nature is a living organism, and humans are also a living organism. And that unity of life was very much fundamental to my upbringing. And that's a kind of Jain culture, but also I think similarly, Buddhist culture, Hindu culture, Sikh culture, all those cultures have this thing in common, that we have a unity of life. And that's was my upbringing.
It's kind of conscience that nowadays we call a holistic way of seeing the world, right? Everything is one. There's a unity. Listen, Vandana, please, could you tell us the meaning of the red dot you sport on your forehead? Looks good. It's called Bindi, isn't it? What is
it? It's called Bindi, but it's a Bindu. And Bindu means dot. And, you know, Indian cosmology, Indian philosophy, as Satish said, is very, very deep. It sees no division between the microcosm and the macrocosm, between us as persons and the cosmos. So we also realize that you can represent anything in many ways. One way you represent anything is with sound, and that's why the whole role of the mantra, the sound, the om, then you can represent anything as yantra, as geometric design. And all geometric designs, you know, are circles and triangles. But as you learned in geometry lesson one, a circle is a moving dot. A line is a moving dot. Triangle is three lines enclosing a space. So you can represent the whole universe beginning with the dot. And the little dot, therefore, a symbol of the universe. It carries the universe, just like in quantum theory, the quanta holds all of the interactions. There's no separation. And of course, there's a third way of representation, which is in iconography. And, you know, our sculptures and our temples are a celebration of that. But if you go to Buddhist temples, you will see the amazing work of the yantra. And if when I go to the villages, in fact, this is one of my future projects, to take the geometry of art at the village level, the beautiful yantras, the beautiful mandalas the women make, getting up at 4 a.m. just to create beauty. And very often it's made of rice powder. And once I stopped and I said, why do you get up so early and do this? And I was explained that the rice powder is food for the ants. But in giving food to the ants don't come into the house. So not only is it feeding the ants, but it's pest control, you know, for keeping your house pantry, and it's creating beauty. So the dot really is holding the cosmos.
Creating beauty and knowledge. Listen, Satish, when we read about your life, the story usually highlights at its beginning the peregrination you did when you were very young, in the 60s. You've marched more than 13,000 kilometers across countries that had nuclear power, nuclear weapons, and this was during the height of the Cold War. Why did you do it, and what was the greatest lesson that experience brought to you?
Yes, I did that as a pilgrimage for peace. And when you do a pilgrimage, you walk. So I decided to walk from the grave of Mahatma Gandhi
And I walked through 15 countries via Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Georgia, Russia, Moscow. And I was received in the Kremlin. And then I walked through Belarus, Poland, Germany, Belgium, France, and England. And then I sailed across the Atlantic and went to America and New York to Washington. So 15 countries and 2.5 years. And I did that because we want, my friend and I, we were two together, and we wanted to see peace in the world. Not only nuclear disarmament, but also all other armaments. Because we are a small global village, and the whole of humanity is one. We can live together peacefully. We don't have to see each other as enemies. America is enemy of Russia, or Russia is enemy of America, or Europe, or China, India, all the countries. We can all live together in peace. But also, I wanted to make a peace with nature. The way we are treating natural world is also like a war against nature. The way we are destroying our rainforests, the way we are treating animals and putting them in factory farms, and the way we are treating our soil and using soil like just a resource for the economy. So I wanted to make peace with nature and treat nature as a living organism, which is sacred nature. And so also I wanted to make peace within ourselves, in our own heart. That without peace in our heart, we cannot make peace in the world. So peace within, peace with all people, and peace with nature. That was the mission of my walk around the world. And 2.5 years, and I walked without any money in my pocket, because I was looked after by the strangers all over the world.
And this was the basis for you to develop what is nowadays called deep ecology. Could you explain to us what are the principles behind the idea of deep ecology?
Yes. Yes, that was kind of, you can say, my walk around the world was a walk for deep ecology, because shallow ecology treats nature only as a resource for the economy. Economy rules, and ecology, nature, only as a means to an end. But the deep ecology says that economy is the means to an end, and the end is human well-being, well-being of the planet Earth, and integrity of nature. Because in deep ecology, I believe the whole cosmos is our country. The whole planet Earth is our home, and nature is our nationality, and love is our religion. That for me is a deep ecology, going deeper than all these superficial political systems, economic systems, nationalities, religion, all these things divide humanity. Whereas when you say cosmos is my country, planet is my home, nature is my nationality, and love is my religion, then whole of humanity becomes one and united. That is deep ecology.
Satish, listening to you, I remember, it reminded me of the idea of Ailton Krenak. Krenak is a leader of the indigenous peoples in Brazil. And once I was with him by the river, this River Doce, Sweet River, it's called in Portuguese. And it was spoiled by industry and spills of terrible accident, environmental accident there. And then Krenaki told me, you see, people look at this river and they call it a resource. They call water resources. It's not a resource, it's our companion.
Yeah, but deep ecology is very much derived from the wisdom of the indigenous cultures.
Para mim, a água é uma entidade. Não é um recurso. Aí, quando eu ouço falar que a água é um recurso natural, eu fico pensando, ainda não entenderam nada. Ele tem uma função maravilhosa que dispensa o nosso senso de utilidade. Mesmo que a gente não use nada do corpo da água, ele está fazendo um serviço essencial para o planeta. e para outros seres também, que nós nem sabemos reconhecer, né?
Vandana, what about ecofeminism? Could you give us, outline us the main ideas behind it?
Yeah, you know, in the early 70s, I became a volunteer in a beautiful movement in my region in the mountains, because I come from the Himalaya. And the Himalaya is protected by the forests because we get these heavy monsoons. And without these trees, this young mountain system cannot be protected. You get landslides, you get flooding. And this is exactly what happened. Forests were being cut. Logging was being done, just like you've seen in the Amazon. And in the early 70s, women of my region rose and said, these trees are our mothers. These forests are our mothers. They're not timber mines. They're the sources of our water and our soil and of pure air, the oxygen that we breathe. And they said, we are going to hug the trees. And the movement called CHIPKO, which means to hug, to embrace, was born. And that's what I volunteered in, even while I was doing my PhD in Canada on quantum theory. Later, I was asked to write about this because I'd spoken at the Women's Summit in Mexico. And people said this connection between the subjugation of nature and the subjugation of women, the colonization of nature, the colonization of women, coming from the same sources of capitalist patriarchy. You must write about it. So I wrote my book, Staying Alive, and connected the worldview that is both unleashing the war against the earth, but also the war against women. It's responsible for ecocide because it treats the earth as just raw material for industrial purposes. And it treats women as objects. So ecofeminism, very simply, is the recognition that nature is alive, nature's creative, and women are alive and creative and subjects. They're agents. They're not objects. And the oppression of both has the same roots. And the liberation of both is the interconnectedness between humans and nature. And it's women who are leading the struggles in defense of nature. This is what I've witnessed, whether it's defense of rivers or it's defense of forests or it's defense of the seed and the work I do with women on protecting seeds, doing ecological agriculture. So ecofeminism really is removing the blinkers of greed, of the monocultures of the mind, of capitalist patriarchy.
Brazilians now are having the chance to watch the documentary that tells this story, The Seeds of Vandana Shiva. And there's some scenes of, we can call, a turning point in your story, in your trajectory. It was in the WTO, World Trade Organization, meeting in 1999. Let's have a look at those scenes in The Seeds of Vandana Shiva.
In 1999, the World Trade Organization had its ministerial meeting in Seattle. When we decided to organize, we formed with the idea that now that globalization will be institutionalized through WTO, it's going to have huge impacts. And if we aren't there as citizens to tell the true story about what free trade is, then their propaganda machinery will make it all look miraculous.
The police shot tear gas and beat us up, and, you know, we were running down the streets. It actually had a global impact. We stopped the WTO meetings.
We want a return to national decision-making, which we control.
The WTO system is voluntary. You choose to take on these obligations.
We have watched our countries being forced to accept the rules by arm twisting, by constant threats.
It's wrong to believe that world trade rules are just for the big players, for the global corporations.
The rules of intellectual property rights were written to protect the Monsantos, These are not rules for the environment and people. These are rules for monopolies.
Income disparity is increasing, but I think not because of trade. I think because of skills.
I assume he's thinking that Monsanto has the right to take over control over seeds because it has high skills, and the rest of the farmers having low skills can disappear from the planet.
Yeah, one could suppose you would rest your case, but this was just the beginning. I think it was an event that was a landmark in your life, wasn't it?
The landmark was 2 years before, when I was invited to a meeting on the new biotechnologies and the corporations, the chemical corporations, which are also poisoning Brazil. They said, now we must own the seed. And we'll do it through genetic engineering and taking patents on life, which in effect meant they were saying, we are creating life. And I found it so wrong. I said, no, I do not accept patents on life and I will resist. So I started to look, and they said, we want a world order in which patents on seed will be the only way and seed saving will be illegal for the small farmer. I said, saving seeds is our duty. And we will not ever stop. And what Satish and I share so closely is the Gandhian concept of not cooperating with unjust law. Satyagraha, the power of truth. Because of that, I got into GATT and WTO. Because of that, I was in Seattle with the International Forum on Globalization. And, you know, you began by saying, we are so different. I want to remind you that it was the trade, the ambassador to GATT from Brazil, who worked with the ambassador from India, Mr. Shukla. The Brazilian ambassador's name was Ricopero, something like that.
Ricopero.
And I remember his very famous statement. He said, the rich countries have got together to write the rules with their corporations to expand the power of their corporations. And the kind of choice you're giving us is asking a chicken, what kind of sauce would you like to be eaten with? So Brazil, Africa, Asia were all part of this new asymmetric recolonization. That's where we called it, recolonization. And Seattle was a very, very important step. And the police in Seattle showed the way. Before that, no protests at police. After that, there's no protest where there is no police. And showed that we've entered a new age of corporate rule, where corporations rule the world, and where democracy comes in the way, then the state must be used in military operation. And that's when I wrote then my book, Earth Democracy, that the only way we will be able to resist the system peacefully is by combining our power with the power of nature, realizing the freedom of all beings and the freedom of humans is one freedom. And when we join hands with the earth, together, people and the earth and all her species, we are a more powerful force. But we have to recognize that power. And that is the peaceful revolution, the nonviolent revolution, that we have to continue making no matter what. You also mentioned Ayutthaya Krishnakumar, whom I've met, and we have fought on common issues for so long. So actually, our unity is very deep.
We're closer than we think.
And that's the unity we must build for the future.
Yeah. We are much closer than we realize. Listen, Satish, your resistance is based, it's a daily action on education. You founded in 1991 the Schumacher College, named after the famous economist that wrote the essay, Small is Beautiful. So what are the main differences you would point between your school and the conventional teaching?
Yes. Conventional teaching, when you go to a university or a school, the teacher look at you and they think that you have no body. You have no heart. You have no hands. You have no body. You have brain, only head. And only half head. Because we have two hemispheres of our brain, the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. We wanted to change that. We wanted to make education holistic, in which you have education of head, whole head, left brain and right brain, and education of heart, and education of hands. So at Schumacher College, we, our students, do some practical work. They do gardening, they do farming, they do cooking, they go out in nature. We say nature is our teacher. Don't only we learn from the books and human teachers, we also learn from nature. Nature is our teacher. And conventional education is job-centered. You are educating people to get a good job. And what is a good job? Better paid. And what is paid? More industrial, more pollution of environment, more global warming, more climate change, more carbon emission, and more waste, and more pollution of the oceans and rivers and soil. That's our educational system is the cause of climate change. Our education system is the highly educated people in conventional education are responsible for destroying our planet Earth. Therefore, we have created Schumacher College so that people can learn to look after nature, learn to look after our planet Earth, look after our forests, look after our soil, and look after human beings. And now I'm delighted to say that even in Brazil, we have Escola Schumacher. And I'm coming to Brazil next year in April. I'll be there in Brazil for 2 weeks and talking about it. So that'd be my great privilege to speak to Brazilian people directly and inform them. And I'm delighted to say that from Brazil, we have many students to Schumacher College. More than 500 alumni we have in Brazil.
I'll take the opportunity to show a personal testimony of Ana Siqueira. She is a Brazilian lady that attended Schumacher College about 7 years ago. Let's listen to her.
A minha relação com a Schumacher, ela acontece em um momento onde eu estava em transição de carreira, a minha formação é comunicação e eu queria migrar para a sustentabilidade. E a Schumacher, ela é reconhecida internacionalmente pelas suas práticas sustentáveis, porque o college é uma ecocomunidade, então todos lá têm que fazer as atividades do dia a dia da comunidade, então desde plantar na horta, ajudar na limpeza da casa, ajudar a fazer o almoço, a limpeza do almoço, então todo mundo ajuda, independente se você é professor, aluno, visitante, né, não tem nenhuma hierarquia. Então, eu conheci ali alguns brasileiros na época. Hoje, a gente tem uma rede aqui no Brasil, são mais de 100 pessoas, onde a gente consegue fazer algumas trocas, acolher as pessoas que estão chegando da Inglaterra. E como fala, né, o fundador, né, da escola, o Satish Kumar, ele fala para a gente ir para lá, para adquirir, consumir tudo que tem lá, tudo que a escola oferece, né, viver aquela experiência, voltar ali para o seu país, para a sua cidade, para o seu bairro e fazer essas micro-revoluções, essas transformações, né? Então ele fala que nós somos agentes da transformação e eu me sinto hoje uma agente da transformação, então eu tento aplicar todos os meus conhecimentos que eu vivi lá.
Spreading the word. Satish, we can see that both of you, your work stems from a profound disagreement, dissatisfaction with the way humans run the world. So I would like to ask you both, where can we see a silver line, reasons for hope?
Yes. You know, any big change can start from the bottom up. And we have to start with people. The big change is not going to come from the White House or from the Kremlin or from any big centers of power. Big change will come from the bottom up. And so at the moment around the world, people are realizing that the way we live on this planet Earth is not healthy. We have to live in a more harmonious way. Grassroots movement, and we can all be the change that we want to see in the world. We have to start with ourselves, and then we have to communicate this change to other people through music, through books, through speaking, through examples. And then you have to join other people together and create a big movement. So this is a way to bring about a big movement. Be the change, communicate the change, and join others to change together. Because all our thriving and flourishing is mutual. No one person can change the world. Vandana and I are doing our best, but we have lots of people working with us, supporting us. So be the change, communicate the change, and join others to change, and then change will come.
Thank you so much, Satish Kumar. I'm looking forward to meet you personally next year in Brazil. And I hope Vandana, Shiva, please come to see us in Brazil as well. It will give us great joy. Thank you so much for the conversation today. Take good care of yourselves and of ourselves as well, as we've been doing.
Thank you.
Thank you for your good questions.
Obrigado.
Thank you, Pedro. And looking forward to seeing you next year in Brazil.
So do I. Thank you so much. Quer ver mais? Entre no Globoplay.